Get ready to get your nerd on.
Kick the week off right with games, gadgets, and general geekery from the ladies of the Electric Sisterhood on the Eshcast.
On Tuesday, the J-pop and alternative hotspot hits your eardrums on No Borders, No Race.
Geek Aggro is coming at you on Wednesdays to fill what's left of your cerebral cortex with the hottest beats to get you on your feet.
Then you have me, Phil the Issues Guy, with the live issues program's post-episode recaps on live right after your favorite shows and taking all of your questions.
It's going down each week, only in the land of Ash. Nerdcore at its finest.
Bastards and wenches, and welcome to another episode of No Borders the Race. I am your host, King Baby Doc, and joining me today is one of my good buddies from Phil's Recap and Reviews, Phil the Issues Guy.
Hey, King Baby Doc, how's it going today? Good to be with you.
Yes, it is going very good. Can I just say that this year of 2015, it's been a good year to be a geek.
It really has. I mean, it's interesting that quote-unquote geek culture is so much a part of the mainstream now, and it's interesting to that extent. Like, I look forward to it not quite being as much in the mainstream again and us getting it back a little bit. I know that sounds a little weird, but I don't know. I'm one of those guys that I can't help it. I have my biases with the people that made fun of me for the things I'm into and now are into it. I have a little bit of a problem with that. But for the point of our enjoyment, you're correct. It has been an excellent year to be a geek.
I mean, we've got a new Star Wars movie coming out, which we're going to be talking just a little bit about later on. We've got a new Evil Dead series. We're not just a movie, but a brand new TV series with Bruce Campbell coming up in just a couple of short weeks. And
this is
we've
also
got the Muppets back.
This is also the year that Daredevil came on television, which I consider maybe the best superhero property ever put on screen anywhere when it really comes down to it. At least on television, I consider Daredevil the best superhero television show ever produced.
No, I totally agree with you. I mean, I haven't watched all the episodes yet. I know, shame on me.
That's fine. I mean, they're in, again, to hence to what you said at the very beginning, because we're in such an age where there's just so much out there, it's honestly, you have to pick and choose your battles these days and what you're going to watch and what you're going to check out. There's so much good stuff out there, whether it be movies in the Marvel continuum or different things like that. Like, I still haven't seen all of Guardians of the Galaxy, even though I love that movie and I love what I saw of it. I just watched it at a friend's as I was leaving. I'm like, oh my God, I got to watch this movie. And I just haven't had the opportunity to finish. There's just so much out there.
No. We're being drowned in geek culture, and it's a good kind of, well, maybe not drowned, we're just swimming, we're just relaxing, we are just enjoying the view of this whole geek culture, and it's great. Now, I love it.
Occasionally when we're in that pool, you know, we're swimming and relaxing in the pool, occasionally kind of like in Caddyshack, and it's not really an almond joy, it's actually a duty like Ninja Turtles, like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles the movie comes floating by here and there. We have to deal with those duties floating in the pool.
Or in our case this year, Fantastic Four reboot.
Right, Fantastic Four. I mean, there are those landmines around that you have to stray, but in the same way that when there was a excess of excellent bands in the 90s coming out of a certain Northwest area, you know, there'd occasionally be the shit band too that you need to be cautious of as well. I mean, it's just what it is.
No, I totally agree with you. That's why you gotta be careful with which properties that you gotta look into and wanna check out, because if it's something that you know is very precious and it's in the hands of someone that you know is not gonna do such a good job, it might ruin your whole outlook of said property.
Exactly. That's why it's important to make sure you always check in to No Borders, No Race, check into Phil's Recap and Review, check into all of our stuff, all your guides through the waters of shit sometimes. And we'll watch it. We'll guinea pig it. We watch crap as well as we watch good. And it fills us with disgust sometimes to come out here and tell you, you know, don't watch Fear the Walking Dead. It's a horrible pile of steaming horse crap.
No.
Stay away from it. But, you know, we watched it for you.
You see, my thing with Fear the Walking Dead is it should have just been like a short like movie special. It should have been turned into its own series.
And the problem was, and again, I can talk about this on nauseam, and I've talked about it nauseam too. You can check out my channel, Phil's Recap Review, if you want to check out more shit talk of Fear the Walking Dead, or also Red Team Review. I did something with Carmine from Red Team Review about this. But it's absolutely true that this series isn't horrible. It's just, it's like they had something really pretty in their hand and they had to drag it through some cow crap first and just and ruin it, because just simply the story of Los Angeles itself from a wider angle perspective, looking down on Los Angeles and seeing Los Angeles fall, is an interesting idea for a story, and it could have been something great. Instead, it was just meh. And yeah, that's the problem. It wasn't horrible. It's not bad. There's so many worse things on television right now. It's just meh. It's meh.
Yeah, I feel like the problem was they just stretched that shit out just a little bit too much.
Yeah.
Like I said, if you had condensed it into a special or to its own TV movie, it would have been so much better. But because they just wanted to fill so many episodes to get the high ratings and hopefully maybe get another season of it.
Sorry about that, at King. And I just while you were saying the other season about it, it's important to mention that this show is really stupid, because they've decided to have the show come back. It is coming back, which I don't have a problem with, but it is, instead of doing it right before the season of The Walking Dead, it has decided to premiere season 2 of Fear the Walking Dead in the spring. And if those of you don't know what I'm hinting at right now, I'll give you a little hint. There's another show on HBO that's coming into another new season of new material that no one's ever seen, that this stupid show feels like it wants to take away some of that audience. And yes, in fact, I'm talking, it is going to be going up against Game of Thrones. And Sunshine. It's going head to head with Game of Thrones. You stupid?
No, they are stupid. Who is going? Peter Dinklage is just going to wipe the floor of these zombies, okay?
Yeah. He's literally, no, but that's if there were zombies to wipe your ass with. There aren't enough zombies on that show to wipe your ass with. He's gonna take Stannis' son, who, if anyone doesn't know and has watched Fear the Walking Dead, the character of Nick, who plays the junkie on the show, is an actor who played young Voldemort on Tom Riddle in one of the Harry Potter movies, and he is also the son of the actor that plays Stannis on Game of Thrones. So maybe he wants to go up against his daddy.
Wow. Damn.
Sorry for that piece of geekdom. But that is a fact. Worlds colliding, as George Costanza would once say. But as King was saying, we live in a really awesome time to be a geek. And there's just so much excellent stuff to talk about and look forward to in this next coming year from the end of 2015 into 2016. So much fun stuff.
Yes, absolutely. And for this episode of No Borders, No Race, we're going to be talking about two things that are near and dear to Phil's heart: Legend of Zelda and Star Wars.
Yep. I might be, and a lot of people know me as a Star Trek fan, but I love Star Wars. Was actually my first love between the two, even though I don't understand why you have to be one or the other. It's not like Elvis and the Beatles.
No.
It's not like you got to be an Elvis fan or a Beatles fan. You got to be a Star Trek or Star. There's two things similar about Star Wars and Star Trek: the title and the fact that some of it takes place in space. Other than that, there's very little to do with either franchise. They don't have much to do with each other.
Right.
And the fact that J.J. Abrams is working on both.
Exactly. Wow. Yeah. Who would have thunk that he would be the one to be bringing back those shows or both those as films and such?
There's a video before we get into it, too much more talking, you play some more awesome music. There's a video out there with J.J. Abrams, Mark Hamill, Kevin Smith, and a couple of other people. It's one of Kevin Smith's shows that he's doing, or I believe it's a Jon Favreau show that he was hosting for the night because they had some geeks on. And it was just interesting to see many years before this, J.J. took taking over the franchise. I think it was right before he was taking over Star Trek, him and Mark Hamill interacting and talking. It's very, very surreal to watch it. And you can look it up pretty easy. Just, you know, Google search or YouTube search, Kevin Smith, Mark Hamill, and J.J. Abrams interview, and it's really a surreal situation listening to the two of them talk.
Awesome, yes. And yes, go onto YouTube and definitely check out that interview. It's pretty interesting, and just to see how that this would lead to doing something. Well, maybe not lead to, but it would like showcase what the future was going to hold right for J.J. Abrams and Star Wars.
Exactly. There was one point where Mark Hamill saying, "Yes, I get ideas for ways to bring Luke back all the time, and I go to George's house and I tell him the idea, and he's like, nah, whatever." And you can just see J.J. Abrams' face the whole time with this like, okay. It's like,
I draw this in my notebook here. Okay, yes.
Put this here. Yeah, da, da, da. And I also have to say one other thing about Mark Hamill just ran that I started watching the show Flash, and I was very surprised to see Mark Hamill show up as a villain on the Flash, and it's excellent to see him kind of do his Joker voice live in the forefront. I enjoy him so much, especially in and we talk about a lot of this, but this isn't really Star Wars related, playing Arkham Knight. And I feel like some of the minor fails of the gameplay of that, too much Batmobile stuff, was all, I think Mark Hamill deserves some sort of award for his performance of the Joker in that game. He was just amazing as the Joker in that game.
Especially for him being such a surprise that no one knew that he was going to come back like that.
Like, it's been a long time since maybe I played like a Silent Hill game or something, that I've really been shocked and afraid in a game. But the first time I was playing through Arkham Knight, when you reach up and when you climb up on the ledge and you see Mark and you see the Joker's face right there, literally jump scared me. I was like, whoa!
So, before we jump into more of these discussions, why don't we play a couple songs. Does that sound good, Phil?
That sounds awesome. Let's do it.
All right. So remember, if you like what you hear and want to support these artists, you can grab just about all these records on cdjapan.co.jp, amazon.com, iTunes, Bandcamp, the band's official sites, and your local record store. We're going to start today's episode with one of the recent end themes to Naruto Shippuden. Here are Flo with the recent single, Niji no Sora.
ダメ打ち明けてくれた人ふと一人じゃないんだって思えたんだ。だけど流れた涙噛み締めたぬくもりをいつまでも僕は抱きしめていられるかな。傷ついて傷ついて泣いて泣いて強くなれ。
諦めない。一人だけやがて太陽の光は刺すだろう。放て。
Ayumi Hamasaki's Inspire from 2008 IU Mix X Gold album. Ayumi's been keeping busy this year with not just a new album called A1, but another release in the form of the 6 EP. And yes, Phil, I know this still doesn't light a candle near the 93 albums Buckethead has released this year as of this recording.
Wait a second. I think by the time this podcast comes out next week, just a little behind inside baseball here, we're recording this a week before it comes out. Yes. By this time, these recordings already up to 164 for the year.
No, you're probably right. I know he's actually doing like one album until like up to Halloween. So I think the technical number might be 103.
Okay, fair enough. Good. I was overestimating the second. My over under was wrong there.
Well, who knows? You might actually be right by the end of the year that it could be 163 albums.
No, we'll touch again. We'll touch base again at the end of the year podcast, and we'll see.
Wow. So yes, Legend of Zelda Triforce Heroes. By the time this episode airs, the actual full game will be out. But the weekend beforehand, Nintendo released a demo, and they did this thing where if like special people got to get like three codes, one for themselves and two to share with their friends. And, you know, when I saw that, I had the hopes of playing with them when the online servers went up.
Well, exactly.
Yeah. Turns out.
Seems simple, King.
It does seem simple. But then Nintendo's like, sorry, you can only play with your friends if they're in the same room with you. The online mode is only limited to complete strangers, which from my experience kind of sucked.
Yeah, I mean, I'll get into my experience with it in a second here, but I just want to make it clear. I'm scrolling up, excuse me. I want to read what they said in the email that they sent to people. Congratulations, you have been selected to try out the Legend of Zelda Triforce Heroes game before it's released. First of all, I checked my email and I saw that message. I saw the preview. I'm like, oh my God, I was selected for something? Here's how it works. Use the download code, blah, blah, blah. Once you download, you can play the available dungeon with two friends via local play.
Yes.
Via local play. That means you need to be in the same room with two other people with 3DSs. And I understand the concept of that when you say if they did this around the same time of some sort of convention of some sorts, prepared this to do it around the same period of a just happens to be the weekend of a PAX or something like
right,
that.
Right, like PAX Australia, I think, is going to be happening pretty soon.
Or something so that they would know that people would definitely be around in the same room. I know some people that have 3DSs, but really when it comes down to it, in this day and age, it's difficult to do local gaming. Especially find enough people that you know that definitely have 3DSs, that definitely got these codes and everything like that, because, you know, I get the codes and I'm like, oh, okay, oh, I'm going to give one to King, but King got the email as well. I'm going to give one to somebody I know, and I gave one to one of my listeners on my show. And then I finally got to play it. I went to go play it, and let me continue reading, excuse me. Okay, other modes such as single player and download play won't be available. You can also try an online co-op mode during these hours, and it has very specific hours that you can try online co-op mode. I ask a couple questions. Why do that with only having certain times? Why don't you just have the whole demo available for X amount of days? Why does it have to be within a certain amount of hours? And King just mentioned this before, and you can't play online with your friends. So you can't even hook into like playing with your friends. You can only play with random people in that situation. That makes no sense. And people can say, oh, Nintendo's never been good at online. They're awesome in some games.
Dude, look at how great they've been with Splatoon.
And I know it's a different company associated with Nintendo, or it's part of Nintendo, but look how great they were with all the Pokemon games for the 3DS.
Yes.
The way that the online system works with that is perfect. It works well in Mario Karts. It works
with Smash Brothers.
In Smash Brothers, it works very well. I mean, some people could argue it could be tweaked, but I think it works really well with the Smash Brothers. I just don't understand. I get how some games are doing this. Battlefront beta did this the week before, where it's, you know, you can only play it, but they could play all of the features from over a weekend, so you could actually tap into all the features. And I have one last little point that I want to make. You say in here that other modes such as single player, so there is going to be a single player mode. Wouldn't it behoove you, Nintendo, to have that as one of the modes you can let people test out? Not a full dungeon, just do what they did like Ocarina with other Zelda games that you have, when you make like kind of like a dungeon that isn't even really in the final game.
Right, like maybe it'd be like a half dungeon or something.
A half a dungeon. Something with enemies, because I'm an idiot and I didn't have time this weekend because I was doing other stuff. I had it's getting to be winter, so I packed up yard shit and I friend was in town, a lot of shit happened, and I couldn't play this weekend at all online with anybody. So I went to go sit down and play, and I expected, I kind of overlooked or read over that line that says the thing about you can't play one player game. And all I could do with the game was go into the hut, go into the hub land, and talk to some old man that told me I can't do anything because I don't have two friends. He's like, you can't play. You don't have two friends. Fuck you. Even like the Four Swords game on systems three handheld Nintendo systems back.
Yes.
With this game is probably, and you can talk about this a little bit more with, because you actually played it. I assume the game is kind of similar to like Four Swords in that way, where you're playing with other people and you're going and, solving missions together, so to speak.
Yep. You're going through dungeons, you're trying to solve puzzles and such here. And you all have swords, but then each of you get like a different secondary weapon, like bombs, arrows, windsack, the boomerang.
You couldn't have had fake people. You couldn't have had computer, NPCs like going with you or like mirroring your moves or something. I don't know.
Right. Yeah, yeah. But there was like one level where two people had the windsex and then one had the bombs. And it was apparent as to what they were trying to do, especially when it came to the boss battle. But here's the thing. The game has you interact with the other players via icons and alerts. You know, these cute little things that kind of look like they kind of look like the Wind Waker version of Link that's like celebrating.
Can you do voice chat?
This is what I'm getting at, because after my playthrough, voice chat would seriously have been a better option.
And just like I was saying a second ago, it's not like they have not done that in Nintendo games yet. And you can say, oh, we don't want kids and blah, blah. You do it in Pokemon. Pokemon voice chat works so fucking well. I'm sorry. Motherfucking well. Sorry. It works so good. And I'm surprised. It's like I have a walkie-talkie.
No. I totally agree with you. And that's why I'm a little bit upset of the way that this whole setup is, especially with the people that I had to play with because they weren't friends who were familiar with the Zelda lore. But the thing is, like, no matter how many times I pushed the button where it was like, all right, let's build a human totem. Let's build a human totem. I'm pushing the human totem button. Come on. Let's all do it. All right. One guy did it. Why isn't the other person doing it? Why is the other person not doing it? Why aren't you doing anything? Why did you knock me down? Oh, my God, why? You just killed me. Why?
And I understand, why there's not voice chat in Smash Brothers. It makes sense. But in any kind of cooperative game that has elements of MMO or whatever, or when you have to solve problems together and actually, because I think the idea of a online co-op Zelda game is a really good idea.
I think eventually
on another system somewhere down the line, a full-fledged online Zelda world is a good plan. But Nintendo, I know you don't always listen, but I know sometimes you do. Guys, we love you. King and I, we really love you. We defend you all fucking time. Don't do this to us. Do not take a game that older people could be into. This is a game, the way it feels from even playing in the hub world, I feel that it feels like an overhead Zelda. It feels like you're playing like a Link Between Two Worlds or
Link to the Past.
Yeah, exactly. It feels that way. 3DSs are in the hands of a lot of people in an older age group. This is a game that could be very successful for those type of people if you market it to them, and they're not doing it. And they're not putting voice chat. They're keeping these
these little icon things. Okay, hey, I got an item, or hey, use the item, or yay, cheer, or no, and it can be really confusing. Well, it's not confusing to me, but it's confusing to a lot of the other people who were playing it with me.
And I have one other point to make about that, because we mentioned Splatoon being the online works really well with the way you can connect with people. But I do think that's another game that would also benefit from a chat channel or something like that. I know people work around it by connecting on Skype or connecting on Ventrilo type places to actually, you know, talk and figure out the plan. But
right. Splatoon's one of the very rare ones from my experience where I don't see the voice chat being necessary. If you see there's a person that's in trouble, you look down at your screen, you just click down at where they're located, and boom, you get sent down right then and there.
Good point. I think I agree with you to that extent when you're playing it on that level of just playing it for fun. I guess I'm more thinking from the end it's such a game that I could see be very successful from the competitive gaming standpoint and from people watching it. And I feel like to get really good and practice and stuff, it would be awesome if you with your friends could create a private chat room on the Nintendo servers to talk to your friends while you're playing. Like not from a pick up and play standpoint. I agree with you. I think you don't need it, but for that next level of strategy, it would be interesting to be able to connect with people you know.
Like if you were able to use like sort of like the PlayStation Party sort of setup, like how the PS4 has.
Exactly. If Nintendo had something like that attached or included in the system, which they do, but it doesn't integrate like that, which you and I have played with once, and then there was no reason to ever play with it again, where you can do the chat with your friends.
The video chat, yeah.
Video chat. If they tweak that mode a little bit and set it up like PlayStation does with the parties and stuff, and you could do that in any game you want with your friends, I think you're right. They don't need to necessarily put it in game, but the next Nintendo system,
yeah, the NX.
The NX should have that as an element, and I would be upset if they didn't. That's one of the features. That's a different podcast altogether.
Yeah, I think maybe when more news about the NX comes out, we're going to have to revisit that because I feel like it's trickling out slowly.
That being said, King, if you want to go back in time, if we've hopped in the DeLorean or in Bill and Ted's phone booth and went back in time, and before any talk of the NX was said, I believe there was a podcast somewhere, sometime, where you and I were having a discussion where we said, before it was ever talked about, that Nintendo's next system should be a handheld. I think they heard us. I think we did that.
Yeah.
I'm
pretty sure we did discuss about that, so sort of the handheld like and console ago. Hybrid.
Like, I'm talking about, like, when the Wii U first came out. Like, yeah. I think, like, maybe even before. I think in one of those, like, pre-Wii U discussion type.
You know what it was? I believe it was right when Bayonetta 2 was announced as a Wii U exclusive.
I think we did
that episode.
But all in all, I mean, I feel weird talking too much about the game, the Zelda game demo, because I didn't really get to play too much of it. Would you think, like, as of... besides all the problems that you had with not being able to connect with your friends in the demo version, hopefully that will be solved in the actual game that you're playing. You'll be able to have some sort of connection in those matches, at least, you know, play with friends. The gameplay itself and what you do in the game, was it fun?
Absolutely. The games, the levels were pretty fun. The bosses and even the mini bosses offered a good enough challenge. And it did feel like a good mixture of Four Swords Adventure meets... like A Link Between Worlds. But my issue is when it comes time when the game comes out, I really just suggest playing with your friends, not with complete strangers. Play with your friends, use Skype, Google Chat, or even the Wii U video chat if that allows more than one person to map out strategies and go out and defeat each of the dungeons. Because if you were to go in there blindly with two complete strangers, you're gonna lose.
You're gonna die. It's gonna hurt. Yeah. Absolutely. And I mean, all this talk. I mean, Zelda in general. What it really comes down to is, I hate to say this because I am a ridiculous Zelda fan, as you know. I know you are as well. But it's my favorite franchise of any video game ever, and maybe one of my favorite franchises for any medium ever. Like my enjoyment for the Zelda games is up there as, you know, watching The Godfather or watching Game of Thrones. It's like playing it as that same, or Star Trek. I mean, they're all in those top of like my favorite franchises. Right now, there's talk about a Twilight Princess remake for the Wii U, for the HD and all that stuff. I don't want it. I don't want another Zelda game to come out until the new Zelda game comes out. I don't want to see it. I have to say, I have a little bit of a bias, angriness in me that I love the Wii U. I don't regret any decision buying it at launch, and I played more great games for the Wii U than I have for my PlayStation. And I'll say that strongly of my PlayStation 4 this generation. There's been more must-have games, and there's more games I play every day, and Mario Maker is another freaking amazing one. We talked about this, I think, last time I was on with you.
Yes.
But it, if I'm having to wait till the dying days of the system to play my Zelda game, like, I understand they want to make it perfect, but I am so upset about the Zelda thing. And I'm so upset that we're going to have to wait, and now there's all this talk and rumor about it coming out on the NX instead of coming out on the Wii U, or maybe doing the dual launch like they did with the other one.
Hardly enough with Twilight Princess.
Yeah, with Twilight Princess, and just to rub salt in the wound, they want to put out an HD version of Twilight Princess just to, you know, stuff something in our mouths so we don't have to worry about this. This game was supposed to be out this year. They freaking fucked us. That video, is my game going to be out before you? And all respect to the dead, is my game going to be out before Star Fox's? I don't know. I think so. I think we're very close to the end. What happened? What happened in the alpha stages or wherever they were with the game, where they thought they were going to be so close and then they decided they're not going to be close? Is it the same thing as Twilight Princess, where the game was finished but they said, oh, since we're coming out with a new system, let's bring this to the new system to sell new systems? If that's the case, fuck you. If it's that the game really isn't finished, I understand that. But that's really hard for me to believe. I'm sorry. Like, there's some part of me, if they were talking so much about how it's almost done, it's so close, it's going to definitely be about here. And then what the hell happened? What the fuck happened? I want to know. Tell me. I'm sorry.
A part of me feels like it could be because they're trying to make this game bigger than it really should be.
Yep.
Like, I know that they were trying to say, oh, this is gonna be like Zelda, like the Skyrim equivalent of Zelda, and you know what? While I do love the Zelda franchise, I'm scared that if it were to become a Skyrim, and I don't know how you feel about Skyrim, but there's sometimes there are games that are just way too big to jump into.
I think they need only to look to themselves. They didn't need to look to Elder Scrolls series and say, oh, because people want an open world Zelda, but what they really mean, I don't think they really do. And this is, I'm sorry, people can start the hate train here, whatever. I don't think people really do want an open world Zelda. I think what they want is the illusion of an open world Zelda, like what they felt like in Majora's Mask. If they look back to their own world of a sense of an alive world. My problem with Skyward Sword and Twilight Princess, and I think they're both amazing games, but I think where the backlash comes a little bit, and people are like, oh, they're too much like the other ones, and there's not enough this. I feel like from a live world standpoint of interacting people and quests you go on, side quests plus the main adventure, Majora's Mask is the peak of the world. I feel like even with Wind Waker, it was like they got to the point with those islands, and a lot of people at the time go, oh, that's really great, but there's a lot of sailing, a lot of those islands are barren, there's not a lot of stuff to do, you're da-da-da-da. If they went back to that thing, and I understand if you take some elements of an open world game that you can do on the technology that you have now with everything you could do with the Wii U, and you take that and then you basically just not do a remake of Majora's Mask, but again, look to what made that world so successful in the what
people. Like it doesn't necessarily have to be big. It needs to feel big.
Feel big. Exactly. And it's important not to have load screens to go from one place to one other, but you can have it go to black and then come back for a second to have the illusion of it being seamless. There's ways of fudging that a little bit. But what's really important is, again, as you just mentioned, is making sure that the NPCs in the world feel alive, that there's really a storyline. And I'd say Ocarina of Time is a weird example because it was the first in a lot of ways. So a lot of it's forgetting about a lot of stuff. I'm saying it's almost a perfect game. That's not what I'm saying. I just think like then you proceed to the next evolutionary step, which is Majora's Mask, which takes pretty much everything that they did great in Ocarina and then adds this other element with the handbook and with everything you need to do to get that sword made and like stopping time and messing with the apple cart a little bit. Yeah. And then I feel like it never progressed again. It just kept taking what those first two games did well and doing it a little different here or a little different there, but not keeping this alive world sense that they had in Majora's Mask in the sense of, and again, that's not to say I'm a Majora's Mask fanboy, because all you care about is Majora's Mask. I'm just saying what everything that they're trying to do with this open world Zelda, it can be achieved not necessarily through endless tech, endless bites or whatever
people
are going. It just needs to have a great story and it needs to feel big. You said it perfectly, King.
Feel big, not necessarily be big.
Oh, yeah, that's what she said.
The more you know.
Yes, the more you know. This part of the podcast is not brought to you by PBS.
What's that, Mr. Charlie? Are we going into Imagination Land or whatever it was called? Are we going to talk to King Friday right now?
Oh gosh. Oh. But yeah, I don't mean to go on a Zelda tangent there, guys.
No, that was okay. That's okay. Because we all share those same issues and worriments. And hopefully, whenever the game gets close to finished, we'll see the progress that was put into it and our worries will just like disappear.
Yeah, and I guess my last thought on that is it just seems to me that it's not just Nintendo either. Is it me or games taking like longer to come out these days, the good games? It just seems like I've been waiting so long for this new Zelda game, and I want a game just designed on the Wii U pad for a new Zelda game. And I just think I've just been waiting for it for a long time. Since I played Batman Arkham City, the Armored Edition. Since I played that on the Wii U, and I'm like, this is the ultimate version of it. This feels so perfect with this. And I always said what I like about the Arkham games is they feel like Zelda games to me in some ways with what you're doing. Or, you know, you're Batman, you're not Link, but in the sense of the world and the storyline, in the sense of freedom, but not too much freedom.
So, true.
So, yeah. So come out, Zelda. Please come out. I'm really hungry for you. I really need a new Zelda game.
As do we. But until then, you know, we got Triforce Heroes coming out. Maybe that'll help pass the time.
I hope, King. I might give it a try. But as I said, I'm being a little irrational right now. I'm like, I sort of have the I'm not playing a Zelda game until it's the Zelda game.
Yeah. You trust me. I've had a friend that feel exactly the same way.
Yeah, it's tough. Yes. That and Fire Emblem, my two favorite Nintendo franchises, and I'm still like, when's the 3DS version coming to America? Send the freaking thing to America now!
Yeah, but I'm more about when's the Fire Emblem Shin Megami Tensei crossover game coming to the Wii U?
Exactly, that was, and again, like, in this, I'm sorry, we keep going on about this. This is because it's a through line with Evan and I's video game relationship, because we bought the Wii U together and we both defend it a lot, and it's a fun system and it's a great system, but there are certain games that it was sold on, and some of those games we still haven't got yet. We just got Mario Maker, which it's said 1,000 times, and it's the last time I'll say it. It really should have been packed with the system.
Yeah. No, I totally agree. That should have been a system.
And that Fire Emblem game should have been out already. That was in the opening Wii U, like, montage of like the game's coming soon. That was like one of the first games announced for it.
Yes, yeah.
Bloody hell. I need to listen to some music. Can you play some music?
Yes, absolutely. In fact, how about a little Flogging Molly, who are currently in the studio working on a new album due out next year. This song is from 2008's Float. It is called You Won't Make a Fool Out of Me.
Inspiration, ain't that a powerful of love? Work your ass off for the crumbs on the table, but they fall hungry on your lap. Whatever became of the scene, that once grew in your hand, and the dirt where your fingers did bleed, and so rush to your head. And you won't, no, you won't make a fool out of me. Strings break, got it made of elastic, and I'm no puppet on your show. You won't sing when the singer is songless. I'm not a notch in your fat belt. But green is the heart of your greed. That much I can tell. You may think you're the captain of me, but I'm your coffin ship from hell. And you won't, no, you won't make a fool out.
Yeah.
feeling of unity that was fear and loathing in Las Vegas with Party Boys. Some may be familiar with this band from their contributions to such anime series as Parasite the Maxim, Sengoku Basara, and Hunter x Hunter. And of course, Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas is one of my favorite Terry Gilliam films, based off of Hunter S. Thompson's classic novel.
I love, yeah, he's such a great filmmaker. I love most of his films. Love underrated film, The Brothers Grimm.
Good. Oh, yes. I love The Brothers Grimm. It really pissed me off that the studio shelved it for over a year because they were like, oh, we don't like the way you made Heath Ledger look a little ugly in it.
Just such great performances and such great atmosphere, which are the strong points of Gillian's work, because actors love to work with him and studios don't. And that's why you get such great performances out of the actors.
Right. And I do believe I read someplace that they're going to be doing a Time Bandits TV series.
Ooh, that's as you said before, great time to be a fan of it's a great time to be a geek right now.
Absolutely, absolutely. And speaking of which, this last Monday, not the Monday that was yesterday, but the Monday that was of the previous week, Monday Night Football premiered during its halftime the brand new and possibly final trailer for Star Wars Episode 7, The Force Awakens.
Oh, I like how you said that.
The Force Awakens. I am here. Yeah, I love Vader. I want to touch him all over his mask. Yeah. Can I just say what I've been loving about the promotion of this film is how much they're keeping the plot mysterious.
Yeah, I actually heard some people complaining about that. I'm like, what are you talking? People just need to complain about something these days. And
I will be upset because half the movie is ruined in this 20-second trailer.
Yeah, and someone was saying, well, if someone didn't know anything about Star Wars and they saw this trailer, they wouldn't know what the hell was going on. That's the point. First of all, that should be the point of a trailer. Secondly, good. Fucking good. Then make them watch Star Wars and educate them if they're going to go see this. Don't go, because I was in line at a place locally in Salem called Bagel World. And Bagel World is very popular at the college that King and I graduated from.
Yes.
And all people now have to go to Bagel World. I was in line waiting behind 17,000 people out the door in the
first 17,000 barefooted people still in their pajamas reeking of weed, mind you.
Exactly. And one of them, the people that are right in front of me were going, oh my God, I don't even like Bagel World. Why am I waiting in line here? Oh, we have to eat at Bagel World because everyone likes Bagel World.
It's tradition. Mazel tov, bitches.
Yeah, and then you people, get the fuck out of line. If you don't like Star Wars and you're not into it and you're like complaining because I don't want to go see this movie because I don't know when it's happening in the trailer and I've never seen Star Wars before, but I totally have gone. If you didn't see Star Wars before by now, and I'm not talking about kids. Kids are different. But if you're like over the age of 25, 30, whatever, and you haven't seen Star Wars yet, most likely it's not your thing. You're not going to see it. And who cares if this trailer? This trailer is not for you. This trailer is for the people that have seen it or are in love with the franchise and want to get hype for this shit and not give us too much. I don't want to know what the plot is. I'm sick of things being spoiled. I'm sickened to death of this off-season of Game of Thrones and how it's so ridiculous with spoilers. And spoilers in general in our culture right now are getting carried away. There are people hiding in bushes in the mountains in friggin' random places of the world taking pictures of Game of Thrones sets. They're going to be like, look, XYZ characters are alive.
It's just so hard these days to keep things on the down low. And that's what's taking away a lot of the magic of the movies, which is why people are no longer going to the fucking theater to see them.
Exactly. Okay, let's fucking say, I'm sorry, we're getting angry now here. Okay, when it comes down to it, think about, and again, I don't want to do the whole, let's go back and back in time when I was a child. But when I was a child and you didn't see anything from trailers were made to confuse you. If they had showed you everything that happened in Empire Strikes Back, okay. Sorry,
guys. You know what the great example of this? The first Alien movie trailer. How mysterious everything was. You didn't know what the hell was going on. All you knew was something was frightening everybody and it was killing people and it was bad. But now, what sort of bad was it? Oh, you had to actually go to the movies to find out.
now I understand that people are conditioned to whatever they see, and now any Marvel movie or any of these other movies, it's almost like I just jumped my own point, but it almost seems like trailers now serve as movies pilots for people to see and test audiences. And movies put out these trailers that to test the litmus test to people's reaction, and then sometimes they'll adjust things. A perfect example of this is the Ninja Turtles movie that I mentioned earlier. That in the Ninja Turtles movie, in the original cut, and a lot of people say this, the original cut, William Fincher's character was the Shredder, but they got so much guff from the trailer that made it seem that way that they went back and did reshoots and hired Asian Man number 8 to play the Shredder and just be a completely hollow character and not have any depth of anything in the movie, which was already had issues, has more issues because it's not, and I know people hate this word sometimes, it's not organic to what the script and what they shot. They had to hijack that by sticking a Shredder in there that is of Asian descent because people were complaining about that.
Because SJWs. Let's just say that. Because SJWs. Oh, it can't be Shredder unless he's Asian.
Unless he's Asian. Blah, blah, blah. And don't get me wrong. I think the guy who played him in the movie and historically what the Shredder works. But the Shredder that most American audiences know and the one that they love is played by Will Smith's father.
So Uncle Phil.
Uncle Phil does the freaking voice of him. And just to get technical, there are some comic lines as well where the Shredder becomes some relative of the Shredder that is through American and is part American. And rumor has it that was the story's inspiration of where William Fincher's character was supposed to originally be the Shredder. There was some foundation of it, just like in shitty Spider-Man 3 when people are like, that's not Eddie Brock. It's actually Ultimate Eddie Brock, which was Eddie Brock's son, who was skinny and weeny, not like the regular Eddie Brock. So
Right.
So it actually comes from some place. It's not completely pulled out of someone.
It's not regular Spider-Man. It's from a different alternate universe Spider-Man.
And ultimately, so people with this Star Wars trailer are finding any reason to complain. And I see people out there being like, I see too much CG. I see this. And I'm sorry if you are. Please go get Evan. I'm sorry.
No. And my issue with that is I felt that there was an amazing balance between CG and the practical effects in this trailer.
What makes to me, and it's older now and it's dated what I'm going to say, but what makes something like the Lord of the Rings trilogy, the original one for when it came out, a perfect balance and what works about it? Because it knows how to balance practical and CG together to create something beautiful. Right now, we live in a culture that if you didn't think they were going to use any CG in this movie, give me your ticket. You don't deserve to go to this movie. Of course, they're going to use some of it, and I think it looked freaking great. I mean, yes. I'm not just somebody that is a ridiculous Star Wars fanboy that's going to take everything. I believe when we talked about the other trailer, I said, yeah, it was okay. Whatever. I wasn't that into it. This trailer was an awesome trailer that showed you the atmosphere, the way the music kicked in, when the actual Star Wars music came in. You actually got full shots of Han and the Wookiee, seeing Han and Chewbacca again, like being in danger in that situation. You got to see Leia. You got to see a little bit more of our main characters that are going to be in this movie. My only fear for the movie is my own biases, which is that I love the old characters so much. Mm-hmm. I'm afraid I might be a little harder on these new characters. And I wonder how much Han's going to be a part of the story.
When watching this trailer, it feels like that Han Solo is going to be acting more like a guy this time around. It's not that Luke Skywalker is going to be the Obi-Wan.
Yes.
Han's going to be the Obi-Wan this time around.
And that's where the speculation comes in, and which is amazingly fun to do. That from what I've heard and rumors is that might not see Luke until the back half of this movie, and Luke is going to be a bigger part of the next movie. Some people are speculating, there's a lot of speculation, that our main villain, what is his name? Strolling down on his name, that some people have speculated if Luke is actually our villain.
Yeah, and, that's what I'm thinking too, because when you're watching this trailer and compared to the previous trailer, Luke sort of has this sort of dark side aspect of him. And that makes me wonder, what happened? Is he still a good guy? Did he get pushed to the dark side because things changed? Did he become a rebel because the whole aspect of how the government is now run over there has been corrupted, which made him have to become a bad guy?
It's so interesting to think about it. And really, what another thing that makes me wonder about Luke is, having had some knowledge of the extended universe that they did with the books that have no canon and no credibility, so none of this is spoilers, but in those books, when Luke does become a little dark and does kind of go down that path, so I think it would be very interesting. To me, I just have the sense that I don't think Luke's going to be... I think maybe Luke will be our endgame villain at the end of these three movies.
That is a very interesting opinion. I think you might be onto something, because let's face it, with the amount of fucked up shit that Luke went through, from having to kill his own father, losing his hand, and just everything that he went through from episodes 4, 5, and 6, I wouldn't blame him if he went dark.
Yeah, and it's just, again, to connect to what I was talking about the first half, that interview where Mark Hamill was talking, he says something along the lines, yes, where he's like gone to George and pursued, I'd would have loved to play Luke going bad. And he talks about that a little bit. And I've heard, in knowing Mark Hamill and knowing some of his other work in playing a villain so well, I could very much see that this Kylo Ren, I believe is his character's name,
yes,
is our villain for a couple of these movies, and then ends up, you know...
I'm going to say movie and a half.
Movie and a half. I mean, I do think he is going to... I'd be very surprised if Kylo Ren gets the Darth Maul treatment and ends up getting killed at the end of this movie by one of our two young Jedis. I'd be very surprised with that outcome.
No. I totally agree with you right there. What I'm just still wondering about in regards to episode 7 is just, and I did touch about this just a little bit earlier, it's like, how has the treatment of the Jedis changed since episode 6?
Yeah.
Are they still seen as the heroes and legends as they once were? Or has there been corruption thrown into it? Because this is why I'm thinking that maybe Luke might have joined the dark side, not because he wants to be evil, but because he knows that there's something going on behind the scenes that he needs to stop before it gets worse.
I wonder, not to get too Knights of the Old Republic here, I think at least I can say I'm pretty confident that Luke will be in some gray area, that he won't quite be completely all light side when it really comes down to it. And the other thing that I'm wondering, because we actually got to see her for the first time, what level of Jedi abilities, and where is Leia? And where is she going to fit in all of this? And is she going to be more of a part of it? I mean, we see that scene with her hugging Han Solo, which is very emotional. And a lot of people have speculated, a lot of the speculation about that is they seem very sad. Is that about Luke? Is Luke in trouble? Do they find out that Luke is dead or something? I don't think that's the case. I think that's probably one of the first times that the two of them have seen each other in a while, maybe, and they're interacting again. And
right. Either that or Han just escaped a really quick brink of death, and Layla's just so happy to see he's alive.
So happy to see him, absolutely.
Because, you know, they hint on... Because if you think about it, that there is always the odd chance of Leia and Han staying together ever since the end of episode 6, so they could be husband and wife, and however
that's true. It's the thing that people sort of glaze over, and they're like, yeah, there's no way that's happened, but you're right, they very easily could have been. And I'm looking at some of the other pictures from the trailer. We get to see a bunch of other droids, but we still have not seen any sign of a R2-D2 sighting.
Well, no. It's very quick, but I could have sworn that you see R2-D2 and you see Luke's... robotic hand, the bionic hand, but makes me think that R2-D2's always stayed around Luke, and maybe R2-D2 is his like sense of light. He's what keeps Luke Skywalker from being pushed too deep into the dark side.
Yeah, and we see a lot of some images of the Knights of Ren. We see a lot of action going on. We see that new lightsaber. We see Han dealing with some stuff. I'm just scrolling through pictures of it. We see what seems to be in one of the scenes. We see one of our new Jedi people, young people with Han Solo and some droids heading to what appears to be a Jedi temple of some sort, or some temple of some sort. So I'm hoping that's when Luke comes into it.
Ewoks don't come out of there, or a bunch of Jar Jar Binks will be okay.
I wonder, and then we obviously the most iconic image from the trailer, and there was a lot, was again the mask of Darth Vader, where it seems like Kylo Ren is doing a little bit of a Norman Bates Psycho thing with Vader's mask. That he's like,
is his skull in there? Because it looks
this is the thing, and this is where a couple people have been a little speculative about when it comes down to it. The Vader mask and the helmet and all of that. Luke burns the body down on Endor, doesn't he?
Yes. No, you are right about that. That's right, at the end of episode 6. How can I forget that? That whole bonfire and the Ewoks are dancing.
Is the helmet in the fire? I'm trying to remember that. Helmet on the Star Destroyer?
I think the helmet was on the Star Destroyer. I do not remember seeing a helmet on Anakin's body when they were burning it. I do not. That makes me think that that Kyle is has actually found the helmet. He found it in that crash site. He found it right on there, and that's where he took it.
And that's where he took it from. And we do see a crash Star Destroyer. It's more logical than the other option of him going down, killing a bunch of Ewoks, and taking the helmet out of the fire right after. It's considering he wasn't born for 30 years after, or a few years after. He's probably born around the time of that.
Yes.
Considering. Because he's supposed to be like 20, 30 years old. So it's going to be very interesting to see how this all pans out. The experiment worked for me, essentially, when it comes down to having it on Monday Night Football. It is interesting because I was hanging out with a friend who's in town who was interested in watching the game. And it was the only way to... And he was like, oh, okay. And he wouldn't have watched the Star Wars trailer. And he's like, okay, I guess I need to buy a ticket for my kid. So he... So he went online and after a while bought a ticket. It took me about 3 hours, but I did get tickets for the Thursday show at 10 o'clock.
Oh, nice.
I didn't get the first it confused me at first because they're not doing actual midnight showings. There's just two showings on the day before. They're called advanced screenings, one at 7 and one at 10:30. And
yeah, I was unable to get any of those tickets.
It was tough. It took me 3 hours of refreshing, just constant refreshing from the time of like 10 o'clock till I finally got tickets at about like 12:30, almost 1 in the morning.
Our buddy DCD just walked to his movie theater and bought the tickets there. I'm like... Genius.
Yeah, it's funny. Like, I saw a post that and I thought about it. I'm like, oh, should I just drive up to Liberty Tree Mall and just buy them? And then I'm like, okay, F this. I want to pay for it. I wanted to pay for it with PayPal instead. So I'm like, okay, I'm not doing that. But I got the tickets, got two of the last tickets for that particular theater. And I'm excited to not really have to worry about it now. And yeah. Now I feel like Cartman waiting for a Wii, and I'm just going to want to travel in time and get to December to watch this freaking movie.
Only to find yourself going backwards in time for 5 months before the movie comes out.
I actually get to watch a movie. And I think I'm trying to curb my hype level, and I'm also trying to... I'm going to try to stay as unbiased as possible when it really comes down to it, because... feel like I wasn't that way with Phantom Menace. I feel like I went into that super hyped, and I went into that
betrayed. Oh, I was betrayed.
No, not necessarily. This is how I feel about the original trilogy when it really comes down to it. When I first saw Phantom Menace, I saw it in the theater 2 or 3 times. The first time I saw it, I was drank the Kool-Aid. I was like, this is awesome. Star Wars is on screen. There's lightsabers and it's good. Ooh, zoomy, zoom, zoom. Look at the pod race. Zoom, 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 zoom. And I saw it a couple times in the theater. a couple of towards the back half of them, I was like, maybe I'm not too into this. And I'd sort of like zone out in certain sections. And I like the battle with Darth Maul. And I like the beginning section when Obi-Wan and Qui-Gon show up on the ship. And then when the second movie came out, that's when I got angry.
Yeah. You know, I've seen one. I've seen three, four, five, or six. I've never seen Attack of the Clones.
Attack of Clones is the worst one to me when it really comes down to
it. I have never watched Attack of the Clones. I was told specifically from Star Wars hardcore fans not to see it.
To me, it's the worst Star Wars movie by far. And I would go as far to say that I think Episode 3 is an all right movie.
I feel like Episode 3, they rushed too much. I feel like I've had this discussion with you before, but I feel like if they stretched it out a little bit more, it feels like that they could have even like expanded it to two more movie or something like that. Just felt way too rushed in Episode 3.
Exactly. And coming back to this movie, the new Star Wars Episode 7, The Force Awakens, that's one thing I'm not too worried about from JJ's standpoint. I think he's going to put together a really good narrative, whether I'll agree with it or whether I'll like it. I don't think I'm really worried about anything except for I can already predict some of the hateful backlash, and we're already seeing some of it now. And I'm just already getting sick of it. And I'm already getting
like the idiot who killed himself because one of the main characters wasn't white.
Yeah, I think when it comes down to it, we have to double check on that story. But I think he didn't actually. I think that was one of those like some guy like. You know, that's angry about it.
I'm still unsure if that was real or not. By the time this episode airs, it'll probably either be debunked or it will be true.
But if it is true, I have to say this, that we're a luckier society of a people because we're like a billion percent less stupid. Because
right. One less racist in the world, I say.
Yeah, I honestly just don't even get it. I don't get what the I'm not perfect. I have my biases. But it's because of people being idiots. It has nothing to do with any of those other factors, which how they like to fuck and how they look. When it really comes down to it, I don't care. People are freaking people, and assholes are freaking assholes, and I'll hate you and I'll have a problem with things if things are bad.
Let us live and coexist in this big fucking universe of ours, okay?
Just don't annoy me with that crap, because it's just stupid now. It's just that you're angry because your side lost, and you have to be pissed off about everything. You know, like when it really comes, and I'm not talking about the Civil War, I'm talking about the common sense not being a dick war that you guys lost. And now, like, I don't like everything about the modern day society. I do think we get a little uptight with the political correctness.
That's a whole totally different episode that I can really jump into.
Yes. That's a different issue altogether that we'll have.
All I can say is watch Anthony Jeselnik's new comedy special on Netflix, and all your political correctness will go down the shitter in 5 minutes.
And I think that's where we're at a weird time where it's really about like you can be not politically correct only if you're funny about it, and only if you're successfully funny about it, like you become buzzworthy about it.
Yes.
And then people are like, oh, okay, it's all right now. But when it really comes down to it, I'll accept the overcorrection if we're going to get to a good point. You know, if we're just weeding out these complete idiots and want to like put the sucker point on them, go sit in the corner until you learn something. If we're overdoing it to get those people to sit in the corner and learn something, then I accept it for a while, and then we'll sort of get out of this again.
Yeah.
and be a better people because of it.
Right. But, it reminds me of the whole Duckman speech, the stand-up comedy episode where he wants people to go see dirty comics, filthy, offensive comics, because they want to be challenged. They want to see how much their comedic limits are. They want to, because that's what it's all about, really.
It really is. And again, if any of you people out there, and I'm sorry to be this guy, if you have a problem with the Star Wars movie because of those things, you know, because of the problems, and I don't even want to voice the opinion of all the shit that's been coming out about it, because I don't want to put light to, I don't even want to say Voldemort's his name. I don't want to say Beetlejuice three times here. But really, guys, shove it up your fucking ass. That's all I got to say about that. Shove it up. Get the fuck out, and please
let that door hit you on your ass as hard as it possibly can.
Just do that, and that's from me to you.
But seriously, guys, we're excited about Star Wars Episode 7.
All that being said, like, I feel like that is, it's people trying to find ways not to be excited about this and being like, why are you guys excited about this? But hey, there's too much CG. And it's all those problems. And then the stupid racist assholes, those are just stupid racist assholes. And forget them. We don't need them.
No.
We don't need them, and they shall never be mentioned again. I just feel like they're trolling, and they're the people that are trolling, and they're looking for attention right now, and shut up.
Yeah. Please go away. Remember, the best way to kill a troll is to starve it from attention.
Exactly. And again, I don't want to take this away from the hype. I'm very hyped about the new Star Wars movie, and I'm really excited to see. I said when the new Star Trek movie came out, J.J. Abrams did it, I said, wow, if Star Wars can look like this and feel like this, then they picked the right person for it. I did not like Into Darkness, but I didn't like it again because of Star Trek reasons and not because of anything J.J. Abrams directed.
No, I totally agree. I enjoyed Into Darkness for the most part. I just didn't like them rehashing Khan.
Yeah, I didn't like the rehashing Khan and any of the replaying issues that they did, like with Kirk dying instead of Spock, and Spock going crazy, mad, angry, and beating it turns into a fist fight at the end. You know, like I felt like those reasons it didn't work. I feel like it's not because of directing, and when it really comes down to it, and I feel like at that point JJ was already sort of off the project a lot and already heading in the Star Wars avenue. But I think JJ does really well, and I think he is the perfect person to start this new Star Wars universe. Does that mean I want him to direct every movie? No. No, I mean, I would love to see, since he has worked for Marvel doing the Avengers movie, I would love to see them get blanking on his name right now, director of the Avengers, Buffy, and everything.
Josh Whedon and J.J. Abrams doing a movie together, and it'll be just about two guys sitting in a cafeteria talking for 3 hours. It'll be epic.
But I'd love to see Josh Whedon work on Star Wars, since it's all the part of the same family now with Disney. I wouldn't mind seeing him, you know, work on the project at some point. I'd like to see a lot of different directors. Hell, let Martin Scorsese direct a freaking Star Wars movie.
I think it'd be awesome. Have a whole Rolling Stone soundtrack and everything. It would be the most badass Star Wars film ever.
And speaking of, in my last point on Star Wars, it isn't about Star Wars. Martin Scorsese is working on a mob movie with Robert De Niro, Al Pacino, and
who'd have thunk it?
Yeah, Joe Pesci's coming out of retirement to play this part. So
yeah,
it's happening. But yeah, so Star Wars is looking great. I got my tickets. I'm really excited. And I think they're giving us just enough to salivate us. I think the fact that we're not seeing Luke, that a lot of people are complaining about, or not really seeing Luke, maybe just seeing flashes of him, it's plot-wise, and they don't want to give away too much of the plot. And I say to that, I really appreciate marketing team. I appreciate what you're doing, that you're not giving away the plot to this movie that you tend to.
Right, because we want to be surprised. We want to go into this and be like, wow, I did not expect any of that, and I am happy that I wasn't.
Absolutely. So Star Wars, can't wait for it.
No. Same here. All right, Phil, thank you so much for joining me here on No Borders, No Race. And please tell our listeners, where can they check out your material?
If you're looking to find my stuff, the best place to initially to go is to YouTube. If you go youtube.com/issuesguy, the Issues Guy stuff, or you just search in the YouTube Phil the Issues Guy, and you can see Phil's recap and review. We do recap episodes of some of our favorite TV shows like The Walking Dead, Game of Thrones, Better Call Saul, Vikings. We also do a weekly recap on Friday afternoons where we talk about anything that we're messed up, and also do some classic series like The Sopranos. You can also go to issuesprogram.com to see a lot of the stuff aggregated together. You can find my feeds for the podcast if you like taking your information that way. But YouTube's really the best because you can come watch us live. We broadcast live and you can join in on the chat make sure. I'm going to do a video where I show people how to manage their subscriptions on YouTube. I'm hoping that this is going to be helpful because I know a lot of people say that, oh yeah, I'm subscribed to channels on YouTube, but I never get updates on when their videos come out. There's a simple thing you can do on your subscription page where you can apply for actual updates. So if you want to make sure you know every time the Angry Video Game Nerd or Nostalgia Critic comes out with a video and you're like, oh my God, they came out with 5 new videos since the last time I'm checked. There's a way to do that. So, and also we have a secondary YouTube channel called Dirty Issues Gaming where it's all our game streams where my co-host Joe Dirty Locks does streaming. He's been streaming Last of Us and the Game of Thrones Telltale game recently on the channel, so check that out. You can follow me on Twitter at I Got Issues Man. Find me on Facebook, Issues Guy, issuesprogram.com, as I said. And those are probably the best ways to find me. Or you can find me outside your house with a xylophone going, ooh. Everybody come home and come to Issues Town and play with me on Halloween.
Follow the magical rainbow that trails behind him.
But guys, thank you so much. And King, as always, thank you for having me here.
Not a problem. And also for our listeners, for the recent news, reviews, podcast episodes, and videos featuring members of the Boston Bash Brigade, you can find us at www.b3crew.com. If you have any questions, comments, if you're in a band and want to be featured on the show, or if you have any questions for our friend Samwise Sensei, you can write to us at thebastards@bostonbashbrigade.com. You can find me on Tumblr at b3crew.tumblr.com, on Twitter at king_baby_duck, and Anime Amino at KingBabyDuckESH. Like us on Facebook.com/BostonBashBrigade and Facebook.com/LandOfEsh. And do not forget about all the other sites under the Land of Esh, including the Electric Sisterhood, Issues Program, Structure Network, and Geek Aggro.
Yeah!
Whew! And today we're going to end the episode with a new track from Man with a Mission, and this currently serves as the opening theme to the new Gundam series, Mobile Suit Gundam Iron-Blooded Orphans. I love the title of that show.
That is a good title.
This song is called Raise Your Flag. And until next time, this is King Baby Duck.
This is Phil the Issues Guy.
Remind you that you don't have to be from Boston to be a bastard, but it sure helps.
Helps.
Yeah.
Later, everybody.
Give it going on.
Ivan Borgo here, reminding you that what you hear each week on No Borders, No Race is but a mere taste of what you can expect from these talented artists from Japan, America, Europe, and the rest of the world. So if you enjoyed what you heard this week and want to support one of these musicians, go to cdjapan.co.jp, amazon.com, iTunes, Bandcamp, the band's official sites and labels, or even your local record store. We always give our listeners and readers the links to the albums from the respective songs we've spun, so if something resonated with you, give the album name a click and get that record in your possession. Who knows? That one album purchase may help bring your favorite J-pop artist closer to your town. So until next time, keep your volume dimed out, and remember to spread the Japanese music revolution wherever your roads take you.